This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We welcome now here on Powerhouse, or here in Powerhouse, Dr. Bandile Masuku. Many people have been asking, where is he? When is he going to get a chance to express himself and his views about what has been going on? Much has been said about his tenure as MEC for health here in the Gauteng province. And the man is here now in studio to speak for himself, to tell us, especially after that important judgment that was handed down by the High Court of South Africa in the Gauteng Division of Pretoria, where he had gone to review the Special Investigative Unit's report that was issued to the Premier, talking to him in some respects, and that's why he took it there. And we will go through some of those points in a while. But let me welcome him, Dr. Bandile Masuku. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to your listeners. And thanks for having us and giving us the opportunity to ventilate some of the few issues.
Thank you for making the time and really giving us this opportunity to have a conversation with you, perhaps as a starting point, so that we do housekeeping, and I'm not accused of we are conducting a retrial in the media, which is always the go-to for some people. Have you made a decision whether you'll be appealing this judgment or not?
We are still studying the judgment, going through it slowly, looking at few aspects that we feel that were not covered by the judgment. So at the moment, we have not made that determination, but we are going to announce very soon on what our stance would be. One of the things that we are considering, it's the positive aspects that come from the judgment, which the judge himself has actually played out on the judgment itself.
No, certainly. I mean, it does seem as if some questions that were somewhat not answered, whether, you know, there can be a review of the SIU report on questions of legality, that seems to have been now put to bed, that indeed it can be, the reports can be reviewed because there's an exercise of public power there which the judgment does canvass. Perhaps let's step back a bit before we get into some of these issues. Some people have been saying it's confusing. Both sides are claiming victory, but the order doesn't give you victory. What is it that makes you feel somewhat vindicated by this judgment?
I think it's what the judge says, you know, on what he has reviewed the documents of the SIU, which in essence says that the SIU couldn't find any activity or corruptive acts that have been committed. Hence, the SIU didn't take me to civil court or even press charges criminally. So those are the parts that are important, because the initial outbreak, as it said, it was all about Masuku, who's corrupt and who used his power to enrich his family. You know, and those are things that the judgment clearly says that the SIU couldn't find any evidence to that effect. And I think that's what makes us happy about, you know, the judgment, and we feel vindicated about it.
When I spoke to Advocate Andy Mutibi at some point here in the station, he said to me, well, they had never made a finding of corruption against your name. Were you worried about the perception perhaps largely created by commentary around that SIU report and the fact that indeed the Premier of Gauteng did act on that report?
Yes, he does say that. But the issue is that how they've postured on the media platforms have always been that they've found a corrupt MEC who used his power, you know, to enrich himself and family. And that's what was their posture. But in essence, on terms of facts and the details of everything that they were looking at, they couldn't find. And I don't think they will still find anything in that regard. And I think that's one of the reasons that we felt that the findings themselves of the SIU as now the judge have said and put it very clearly now that they are just mere opinions of the SIU and which are not supposed to be backed by any facts. You know, they just have to take what the witnesses say. So the posture itself has been very difficult because they've, I think, tarnished my image and posted me as a poster boy for corruption, you know, particularly the SIU corruption.
I mean, the judgment itself does talk whether your political career will be injured in the long term, but they accept that in the short term, definitely some doubts have been cast on your integrity and your person. How does this play out going forward? I mean, do you still feel you've got some role to play in the political landscape and you'll be fighting to play that role?
I think we all of us, particularly myself, I think I do have a role to play, and it's a very big role, particularly in the fields and the sectors of health and in higher education. And this is a role that I think I wouldn't by any chance give up on. You know, it's something that I will fight on because it's the drive to transform our sector, the drive to transform the health sector and build a proper health sector in our country and in the continent, you know, should have people who have the passion to do that. And I think I'm one of those in the current space that can be able to, you know, lead some aspects of it.
In 2019, Dr. Masugu, when you went into that Department of Health here in Gauteng, you were well aware of some of the problems that have bedeviled that department previously. In fact, one of the former MECs of Health had even been made to recuse himself from the Provincial Executive Committee, particularly because of outstanding matters in an SIU investigation of about 2010, and that is Brian Hlongwa. So you're quite well aware that there were things in that department that were not happening well, there were positions that were not filled. As the executive authority, because this is partly at the heart of your contestation and the statement issued by your attorneys talk to the fact that you think there still hasn't been clarity given on the confusion that exists about the extent and limits of executive oversight. What are the things that you went in there and you did to try and make sure that you'd be on top of things? Because clearly this was a problematic department. You couldn't just rely on monthly reports to make sure that people are accounting to you and to society at large.
Yeah, I think one of the aspects that I would want to maybe put it out there, you know, because now it's no longer a secret, you know, it's an issue that I didn't come cold into the department. You know, I came in, worked for almost a year, you know, as one of the special advisors to the former MEC, Dr. Gwen Ramkgopa. So it gave me a better understanding, a better perspective of the challenges that the department was facing. And one of the key challenges that the department was facing was issues relating to financial, you know, management. So when I came in already, you know, in an administration that has had a new HOD, that has had a new CFO, and systems were starting to turn towards the positive. You know, I think the Auditor General on 2 years, you know, I think even the last year he did indicate, or the former, the late did indicate that there is positive results that are coming out of the Department of Health, you know, in Gauteng, and which, you know, gave us that confidence that we are, in a way, turning the wheel, you know, towards the better.
Talking about turning the wheel, one of the things that is always contested is this tension between the role of the executive authority and the accounting officer. I mean, you've had some time to reflect. Are your views still as fixed as they were, that all that went wrong, there was no chance for you to pick it up, and perhaps there's nothing else you could have done to pick up all that went wrong?
I think the issue is that we did pick up irregularities. You know, there was smoke and there was a whistleblowing and red flags that came up. And we did have a discussion with my accounting officer, Prof. Lukele, to say, what do we do? You know, and he gave me steps that which I agreed on, to meet with the whole team and tried to, you know, to sort everything out with the team, the CFO, the chief director, and all the others, you know. And I was quite confident that the issues that they were dealing with, they were handling them quite well. And when he came back again and said to me, you know, seemingly our intervention or his intervention was not good enough and it was not yielding the results. You know, when we then decided to call in, you know, a particular internal audit process where it will help us to identify areas of weaknesses and where we need to strengthen that. And we did enroll, you know, the services of the Gauteng Audit Services in that regard. So all in this, what I'm trying to say is that whilst it is the duty of the accounting officer, but the accounting officer in this situation kept me abreast of most of the things that the interventions that he was putting into place, and the interventions that he was putting into place, we agreed with him that these are the things that we need to continue actually to do to intervene.
What was your working relationship like with the CFO, Lehlwenya, who is said to be quite at the heart of the things that went wrong? Would you say you had a healthy working relationship at some point and it broke down over time? Because I want us to get to that email which keeps coming back and has led even to the court saying you were negligent.
You know, we had a very cordial and a good relation with Ms. Lehlwenya. You know, she's probably one of the, you know, rising stars that in the financial management of the public sector would have been. And I think the comments that the AG had made on our performance and how we're preparing for our audit were actually by and large because of her her presence in the department and her interventions that she has put in making sure that we turn around, you know, our finance department. And I think it wouldn't have been that, you know, over a period of time, then the person who have been doing that work can just go in a bad light.
Do you still find a rising star with all that has happened in the department?
I think he could explain herself in many respects. And I think let's give her the opportunity when she's given that chance actually to do that.
There is an email that purportedly you solicited for her to send a list of suppliers to say, for whatever reason you may have needed it, part of the judgment allude to possible funding that was going to come from the Motsepe Foundation, and they needed to know who were the PPE suppliers in the department. That email, do you remember requesting that you be sent a list of suppliers? Because the court is quite critical at the fact that you went so long without one when talking to the SIU, remembering about the email and then eventually remembering, but quite in a negligible manner.
Yes, I think the issue of the email, you know, it's a very sensitive issue. Indeed, we were in a process of enlisting a lot of funders and sponsors in terms of the work that we're doing of fighting the pandemic. And the Motsepe Foundation was one of the foundations that made contact with me through the MEC of education, Mr. Lusufi, who then indicated to me that the Motsepe Foundation wanted to have a word with me. And part of our discussion with the Motsepe Foundation was that they wanted to know where they can be able to contribute and from where. And part of the discussion then included that maybe the department must also help them with a list of companies that already have been used. And it's not only them, you know, it was also the Tseke family, the Teke family. It was also the Stain Foundation family. So there are a number of them. I think overall, the sponsorship that we got was over 100 million, 350 million, which was quite extensive. And all these companies, some of them we did give and submit some of this list to them.
Someone might say, listening in and think, Dr. Masugu, if you asked for the email, why wouldn't you open it then so that you could see some of the red flags? Because your posture was that immediately when you became aware that this company that is central to the media fiasco and your name and potential involvement or lack thereof, the Royal Bata company, you would have acted in a way that says, no, they shouldn't be here, because you knew who the directors of that company are. Why didn't you open that email if it was so important in your fundraising ability? How does the person listening in today actually believe that you did not know?
There are almost three things that actually happened. And remember, I had to jog my memory back, you know, particularly around what was happening around the period of time that we're talking about, which was around the 1st of April, and what I was possibly engaged in. The first one was also that the CFO and the team, you know, my stakeholder relation then, did confirm that they've already forwarded the information to the Motsepe Foundation, and they've already spoken to them, and it's covered. The second one was which was personal, was that one of my closest friends' father passed on, and I spent the whole night on the 1st, I think from around 10:30 until around 3 a.m. at his house in Soweto, you know, because that's what, you know, I would have done when I got home and I was told that, you know, the person that I also grew up under had passed on, and I just had to rush there and spend some time with them. So those are some of the aspects. The third one was that when I woke up, you know, I had an early appointment that I had to go and do with the Minister of Health, you know, I think we're receiving some donations from Telkom and Hawaii at that point. So there are a number of things that were happening, and my schedule, if I could share with everyone around that time, you would see that there was no even a single time or moment where I could have a moment to have sat down and went through all my emails at the time. And my PA and my chief of staff had some ability to get to the emails because there were things that they needed to respond to as quickly as possible. So there are a number of things. Yes, of course, it is it's seen as belated.
Yeah.
But the issue is that when we went for the interview of SIU, you know, you had to, in a real sense, rely on your memory. And having gone through the stress and the whole period of the accusations and everything, it had to take some time for me to sit down and really jog my memory back and be able to understand what was exactly happening around the time. Because at some point, I actually switched off, you know, around the time when the whole accusations and issues, you know, me taking special leave.
What could you have done better?
I think within the powers that I've had, you know, within the law that we have, you know, we could have, I think, from the side of the audit, you know, the forensic investigation should have come in quite earlier, but we needed to go through a process that usually all the departments in the Gauteng government go through. You know, you do the audit, and then the auditors will tell you that you need further investigation on this matter. It's not just a measure of lapses of systems, you know. So the other thing that is not said, Lukwana, is that the presence of SIU on the PPE irregularities in Gauteng was initiated by the audit that we put in, you know, and which we agreed with the HOD that the audit must happen. And the audit came back and said, no, there are far-reaching things that needs to be investigated further. The Premier's office offered the services of the SIU because we have an MOU that we have with them. And then that's how they came in. So by the time everything started to hit the press, you know, the SIU's presence here was almost like 6 weeks into the investigations. They've already done some interviews. And I think at the time would have actually found some few aspects that were, you know, wrong in that space.
Do you feel then that the court is quite heavy on you, because it says they acknowledge the invitation of the provincial internal auditors on the 7th of April, but say they only started on the 17th of April and this undue delay was not explained, and you were there in court. Was this not explained? Was it a time-buying exercise? Because that's what it is seemingly placed as here, that yes, we want the internal auditors in, but maybe we need to clean up before they start their work.
Remember, what happened is that there was an email that was sent out, the whistleblowing email of the 6th of April. On the 7th of April, there was a meeting of the HOD and the team, you know, which also included officials from the Treasury Department, the Provincial Treasury, which then they decided on aspects on how to improve the system based on what the whistleblowing email said. You know, and those systems or what they put into place in that meeting agreed on was then supposed to be seen that it is working. But when it was seen that it's not working, it's when we came back and had a discussion about the internal audit. So it's not like there was nothing that was happening between the 7th and the 10th or and the 17th of April. There was things that the department, the provincial treasury also suggested, bringing in some directors, chief directors from other departments to come and bolster, you know, the committee, establishing a clear committee of quality assurance, because one of the things that was raised on the whistleblowing thing was that we cannot have one person acting on everything. You know, we needed some separation, and also formalizing the BAC, which is the bid adjudication committee. So there was work that was done between the 7th up to the 17th. And when the whole team realized that those interventions are not bearing fruit, you know, it's when then the issue of giving an independent expertise that comes from CAS. My worry about the judgment.
Let's hold that thought, because it's going to be time for news headlines, and then we're going to come back. Your worry about the judgment, so that we unpack also other things that might just flow out of that judgment. I'm in conversation with Dr. Bandile Masugu, former MEC for Health here in the Gauteng province. You will be part of this conversation after news headlines on 0861 987 000 if there's a pressing question that you want to put to him. But Thomas White is on standby.
Call Faith on 0861 987 000.
Well, 25 minutes to 12 this morning on Power Talk. You can call me on 0861 987 000. I'm still looking. I'm going to hear on Power Talk. I see Owen there. He's trying to append me out of my seat. It's okay, Ozza. It's okay. These things happen, man. Just a touch of a button, and then we know Faith is coming up with Power Lunch very soon. I'm still in conversation with Dr. Bandile Masugu, former MEC for Health in the Gauteng province. What worries you most about the judgment, Dr. Masugu?
Okay. Besides that, the judgment does find the findings of the SIU just to be mere opinions, which is a good aspect. But it also doesn't now explain what extra an executive authority could do in a situation where you are faced with this type of whistleblowing that have actually occurred. In our situation, the email came, the accounting officer, in consultation with myself, met, we discussed the interventions, and he had met with the team. And when the interventions were not working out, we then agreed that we bring an external, in code, a service that will help us to identify and actually strengthen, the thing. And all this has been done in consultation with the accounting officer, because he's the one who runs the administration, and all the officials that are working the department account to him. And if now the issue of lack of oversight, you know, because that's what is said now, the court should have assisted us to define that part, you know, within the ambits of the law and within the ambits of the PFMA. What is it that the executive authority should have done? And it shouldn't reduce it just to the mere issue of an executive authority not reading emails.
Well, in fact, the part of the commentary in my reading of the judgment suggests the court seems to say, well, if you had relied on the month-to-month reports, definitely you wouldn't have picked it up that there is malfeasance or maladministration or misuse of funds happening in your department as per the PFMA. It's as if they suggest that the PFMA, while it is there as an instrument, may not have been of great assistance, and the focus has now narrowed to your conduct, that had you done this reading of this email, things could have been averted from what they became. And this is why they say, you were negligent not to open your emails. Where was your PA when this email came in?
Yeah, I think everyone who's an executive authority should be worried, or any person who's in a leadership space, that not reading an email could be actually prejudged as being unprofessional and unethical. But the whole matter is that, you know, when you work with an accounting officer and we have got a good working relationship, you still have to give the accounting officer the space and the opportunity and the platform to be able to discharge their duties without interference, you know. And I think that has been my working relationship with the accounting officer. Indeed, the monthly reports could, because what we are talking about here, we're talking about events that occurred 2 weeks, 10 days after, you know, the declaration of the national state disaster. And everybody, you know, including Treasury, provincial and national, we're all trying to still find our footing on what are best ways of how we can be able to do these things. So in basic ways is that the judgment doesn't, actually everybody else, I think, don't take into account the context in which all of us were, you know, actually working and functioning in, you know, and nobody was certain about many things. The National Treasury notes were proclaimed and also withdrawn because we were working on correcting as it goes, you know. Now people can safely say that, you know, schools were not supposed to be disinfected, you know, or areas or spaces that were not supposed to be disinfected because now it's hindsight. But at the time, all of us did things that if you look back, you can see that they were somehow not even rational.
You know, at times we often say executive authorities throw officials under the bus, but I find interesting detailing of the flow of events in the judgment itself, particularly Ms. Pino, who eventually becomes the whistleblower, having signed invoices and you know, letters of commitment that were beyond her powers to sign, Ms. Lehlwenya, having not only after the fact of sending you the email, I suppose now realizing that, oh, a boo-boo has happened here. Here is Royal Bata, which is very closely related to you by virtue of you being friends with the then director, now late Inkosi Yamabata Umadzikane Wesibini. Now the flow of events suggests that Miss Kabelo Lehlwenya then embarks on a covering up scheme of sorts of trying to remove Royal Bata from the database and then replace with Ledla. There's a duplication of invoices that is submitted to the department. Do you feel betrayed by these actions, and should have they just come to you and you openly address this matter? Because now this covering up portrays you as if you may have known and they tried on the back end to sort it out, but it still came out.
I think it's a matter that the Ms. Lehlwenya should be able to respond to it. You know, I think she's going to court sometime in June, you know, and I think the matter will be ventilated properly. I don't want to prejudge or prejudice her in my comments, but one thing that is important is that what happened after or whatever happened was an issue that surprised me. You know, some of the details that I'm going through now are some of the things that I wasn't quite aware of. And I don't think any executive authority would be aware of many of the things that happened at that level.
Do you feel betrayed?
I said that I was betrayed by the, you know, just the whole notion of the Diko family getting involved in business in my department without acknowledging or even declaring to me, you know, informing me about it. And I think that's the part that I am partly disappointed in, by and large, by the Diko family.
And how has that strained your relations with Kusela Diko? You know, she's gone through quite a tough time. Have you been able to communicate with her?
I still remain a friend to Kusela, and I think my relation to her late husband was because of my relationship with her, you know, so it is with disappointment that we've went through this, but continuing to correct our, I think we, like I've said to you, we still have a bigger role to play generally as this generation of young people who have led before, that we can play the role in our, you know, in transforming our society. So, yeah.
One of the important things that comes out of that judgment is, or are the powers of the SIU, that in nature they investigate matters, not to make a determination about matters. And it goes on at some point to talk about how in law, nothing was binding the premier to act on the recommendation of the SIU, crafted the manner in which it was itself. But in law, nothing. Unlike the public protector, this is where the judgment even goes, that gives a remedial action that the person directed to cannot avoid without a proper court review. When the premier actually issued a statement on the 9th of October 2020, sort of asking you to step aside in the new colloquial language of the ANC, said, well, I'll wait for the final report so that I can then know whether to bring Dr. Masugu back to his position or not. Where did that change all of a sudden? Because the premier seems to have accepted SIU investigate, doesn't necessarily determine. So it gave you a chance, say, step aside. I'll make a determination when the entire scope of the investigation is concluded. But something changed. Where did it change in your conversations with the premier?
Yeah, I think the last time we had a proper discussion with the premier around these matters, it was before the 9th of October, when I was discharged of my duties, as it was put. And one of the things that I disagreed with him at that point was the actual findings of, or the findings of the SIU, you know, because, you know, the main reason why we also had to take these findings for review was that the SIU makes a finding that I centralized procurement boldly without any language that puts it in a doubt. They boldly say, I centralized a procurement in Gauteng to the Department of Health. And the second bold statement that they make is that, no, you did nothing. In actual fact, if you read the actual report of the SIU, it puts so much colorful language about you abated, supported, you know, all these things that were happening. You did nothing, you know. And those are two that facts that are not true, you know. And hence, you can see how they have shuffled away, shifted the golf post, you know, from those two findings. And the third one was also on the issue of the powers, you know, which by and large they attributed the powers of the accounting officers to the executive authority. So we took this for review because of these three things. But the issue that I disagreed with the premier was that on the basis of these findings that have been put forward, or the opinions put forward, now opinions put forward by the SIU, I can't be the one that will then agree. Because if I do that, it means I'm affirming that those are true. And me and you, myself and the premier and everybody else who serve in the Exco and the Gauteng province knew that those two findings, or actually three of them, were quite problematic, you know, and they are not true, they are false. So I don't know what turned around, you know, but I think the politics in the ANC, there was pressure. You know, the ANC has got people who posture in many respects, particularly around this emotive issue of corruption. You know, they play around with it. You know, in modern day, people will say that in the 60s, when you wanted to deal with a leader or a politician, an African politician, the only thing that we have to do is to assassinate them. But now the assassination is about the character, and people take postures. You know, you will remember that there was a very big move of people stepping aside. You know, there was a one-man demonstration that was done in St. George's about people who are corrupt must step aside. And you know that what happened afterwards. 2 months later, the tune has changed. So I think the pressures and the politics around the ANC in the province, and also the whole atmosphere around the issues of corruption, was a big problem.
Let's just go to the line before we carry on. The posturing, the use of corruption politics in the ANC. We'll come back to that towards the end, because there were a lot of things that happened in some provincial executive committee meetings. Ben, good morning.
Good morning, Lukon. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
And a good morning to Mr. Masugu there. I just want to find out, Lukon, about how Mr. Masuku got appointed to this MEC position. And again, on the issue of email, I don't understand why I didn't get it when Masuku explained it. But if I can just say something
quickly, Ben.
For instance, if Masuku will understand, let's say for instance you're working in an ICU department, and somebody a patient need what you call urgent attention, and Masuku did not open or check the email. Why is still insisting that the court is wrong when they call him unprofessional? Why is still going to challenge that?
Okay. I get you, Ben. I've got Makosonge. Sorry for that. Makosonge, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good, good. Good morning to the doctor as well. I just want to find out from the doctor. Would you say that the psychological evaluation of the corruption, the alleged corruption that took place, did any psychological evaluation take place in any of the corruption that took place, or any other corruption that took place whenever there's corruption? Because we are sitting with a scourge of corruption, and I just feel that if we are not addressing the psyche part of it, then how are we going to uproot this corruption? So I just want to find out from you.
So an evaluation by who, Makosonge?
Okay, I'll make an example. I personally was appointed to in the corporate sector where I was dealing with loss. And when I checked the report, the conclusion I came to was that there has to be a psyche education that needs to take place. And I did that. And by doing that, I actually dealt with the issue instead of firing people left and right.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying? My biggest concern is that we need to uproot this corrupt issue. And especially as someone from health department, this is something that he needs to look into as well.
I hear you, Makosonke. Thank you very much. Dr. Masuku, I think Makosonke is alluding partly to rooting out the culture, the endemic culture of corruption that seems to permeate through the public service in our country.
Yes, I think the issue from Ben that he raises, you know, and I think he makes he confuses two different aspects. You know, when you work in an ICU and we don't communicate through emails, you know, and having worked there, you know, the actions are quite prompt and well. But I think the whole point about the email is that when your people or your staff has told you that they've addressed the matter and they've already done what you had requested, you know, then that it becomes almost pointless, you know. And I think there are people who take time off just to go through their emails and respond to them, you know. And I think that the issue of the email, you know, if understood, and the SIU could have taken time to give themselves, to appraise themselves with the facts, you know, to make sure that they don't make bold statements about something that they didn't verify, and which I think the court does somehow say to them that, you know, their opinion cannot at any way, it is not the onus of the SIU to prove whether the facts are right or not. Mm. You know, for them it's just to collect, which I find it quite difficult to actually to understand. And then the issue of the psych, you know, I think we are going through a scourge of corruption, you know, and I think it's something that the whole country should all of us be aware that we need to deal with it, you know. And part of actually fighting it is the issue of what brings about people to act corruptly, you know. And I think that's what I agree with Makosonke, that we need to actually address that, you know, the issues that comes with the whole aspect, that factors that contribute for anyone to decide to act in a corrupt manner. You know, those are the factors that we need to be able to deal with.
And exactly on that point, the court does find that, in fact, it is inescapable that an investigator must form an opinion about the material gathered do you feel personally injured in the manner in which the SIU formulated its opinion when it even spoke to the fact that the Premier must consider taking administrative action against you? And in a sea of corruption as we are dealing with, how could he have ignored that where you are concerned? Wouldn't have people said he's playing soft, he's being too nice to you?
You know, I think the issue, we did have a very basic discussion about it, you know, because yes, of course, if you say to me, you know, you have neglected a duty, you know, or something that, you know, you're supposed to do, you didn't do, you know, there are a number of ways to take administrative action, you know, but the issue is that the posture of the opinions made by the SIU was a posture that says that, no, this man is corrupt. It is not the posture that was saying the man didn't, you know, exercise sufficient oversight on the matter. And then when the issue of retraining and reskilling, because all of us are not perfect, you know, we do make some errors there and there. But the issue is that how do we then say the administrative action? Because the SIU, on their opinion, their bold opinion and statements of facts that they've put there, you know, they put across a very bad image of Dr. Masuku, you know, corrupt and nepotism and so on. And hence, when you look at their footwork on how they tried to shift the goalpost, you know, to move away from their findings, you know, which we were contesting, it's when then they start to come up with all these other things. And those concessions for me are the positive concessions that come from the judgment that, yes, I didn't centralize procurement. I didn't do all the other issues that they said I did.
In fact, talking about that centralization of procurement issue, then there's also a commentary on the fact that there were things you didn't do, like putting up and making sure such as that some managerial posts are filled. So in terms of the compact that you had with the Premier, you might not have delivered properly with on that. But do you feel that the Premier's office should have, with its bird eye view, firstly investigated the viability of centralizing procurement to your department with the expertise that were available?
The COVID-19 response was a province-wide response. So meaning that the command center combined and put in together everyone who works for the Gauteng government, you know, the HOD of the provincial treasury was part of the command center. You know, the teams of directors from different departments were part of the BAC. So the whole mechanism that was put into place, the command center with the Premier's office, were very clear that this is how we're going to be doing things and work together in tandem. So I think they did do that, and they did put a lot of effort in making sure that our systems improve all the time. Because even the decisions that we took about the audit, about the calling of the forensic investigation, the former DG, the Premier, myself and the HOD had several discussions on it and agreeing on what the next steps would be. And I think that we're able to detect and we're able to act. And now the issues are to await the outcomes of these investigations.
Let's end off with the politics. How is your relationship with the Premier, and how far is the ANC Gauteng Provincial Executive Committee's disciplinary proceedings on you?
We've completed the hearing. We're just awaiting the DC to announce their outcome, and then we can be able to talk to what the outcome would be. And the relation with the Premier will still remain a cordial relationship. You know, he was my senior in the student movement, and he has been very kind in many respects as a mentor and everyone. So I still hold him in high regards and as a good mentor.
Do you feel there are plans to politically marginalize you, given the high levels of political contestation in this province? As always, when a conference is upcoming, there are contestations. Do you think that there are possibilities of your marginalization at play in what has been happening?
Yes, there is. Actually, it has been something that has been overtly indicated. And some of the overtures, the things that have been done, are done to simply exclude me from the bigger body of politics in the Gauteng province. But I don't think they've succeeded, and I don't think they will make us not be able to continue, you know, to be part of the PEC. And I think I won't resign from the ANC, and I won't resign from the PEC. I'll still be active because that's what I think the role that I need to play in making sure that I contribute to the transformation of my sector, specifically health, and the transformation of our country.
Some people are asking, why don't you just go back to private practice and leave this issue of politics to those who want to politic rather than, you know, be marred by some of the machinations in the political landscape?
I took a decision in 2017, 2018, that I will take a break from practice and do politics almost on a full-time basis. Because, you know, when we're young, you can be able to be a student and be a, you know, an activist. And in this regard, we needed to put more effort in making sure that you master one part of it. So I will decide on the issue of going back to practice, but I still do some work, voluntary work at Barra, you know, every month to make sure that I keep abreast with everything that is modern and new in my field.
I know people in politics say, I am led by the will of the people. If the people of Gauteng ANC branches, that is, were to ask you to stand as the provincial chairperson, is that something that you would consider?
Yes, I would. If that's what the branches would want to say, I would want to lead. I would agree to lead.
Thank you, Dr. Bandile Masuku.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.